Hello and welcome to Still Any Good, the podcast where we run the risk of ruining our childhoods by revisiting fondly remembered films. My name's Christopher Webb, and with me is someone who would never be accused of having a short, round willy. It's Robert Johnson.
No, I don't have a chode. Indiana chode.
How you keeping?
Good, thank you. Good. It's mentioned off mic, I was at the dentist today, just for a clean. But yeah, I feel like I've been punched in the face about three times.
Oh my word.
So I'm just eating, trying to eat toffee pops and not wince.
Eating it on the other side of your mouth.
Well, there's both sides of my mouth, they fucking had a go at me.
So. You're not doing that sensitive thing when you drink your hot tea, are you? You go, that thing.
And then a little animated sort of circle goes, no.
Because it does feel quite chilly in here.
It is very cold.
Like the Sixth Sense. It's really
cold. It's very cold in the studio tonight. Yeah.
They say it's going to be 3 degrees tonight. Feel free to make up your own jokes about that one.
I had to rummage around the studio and I found a little kid's pillow or cushion and I put it on the bottom of my metal chair so I don't get piles.
That's my daughter's Hello Kitty cushion.
You heard it well. I'd advise she doesn't use it again.
Right, should we say hello to our guest?
Yes, let's say hello to our guest.
It is a very warm and welcome return.
Oh,
you call him DJ Crake Doll.
Yeah.
It's Mr. Tibbs. Yeah. Were you worried when I leave off the DJ?
I was. Hello, I was ready to correct you. No, I knew you wouldn't, Rob, because I've heard you correct Chris on it before now. I think on the last show.
Well, you know.
In fact, the full name now is DJ Andy Craig from Choose the Tunes on Mad Wasp Radio. Yeah. You've got to do the whole thing.
Fair
now.
Enough. Yeah. I'll remember that for later in the episode.
Next That's time.
Yeah, and if you can just add "you are listening to" at the beginning of that. That'd be perfect.
It's very nice to have you back. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. Good to be here. I listened back to our last encounter and I was really nervous. I was starstruck because I've been listening to you guys for so long.
Oh, my God.
Since then, you know, I'm smoozing with lots of celebrities, you're nothing, really.
We're just two ordinary guys, just one boy looking at a boy, asking him to sit in his garage.
One boy looking at a boy, trying to avoid piles.
Okay, so obviously guest's prerogative. It's your choice.
Yes.
What have we got?
Okay, so hold on to your potatoes. I've chosen... The abbreviated version is I Jacked Todd. Or if you want it, it's Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
The old legend of the Shankara stones. The villager's sacred rock was taken.
Village stories, Dr. Jones.
Fortune and glory, kid. Fortune and glory.
Come on!
I don't want to go!
You know how to fly, don't you?
No. Do you?
Archaeologists were always funny little men searching for their mummies.
Mummies.
Wow. Indiana 2.
Yes. So, why did you choose this particular Indiana Jones film, or this film?
I have a long history with this one, because I really loved this when it came out. I was into Indiana Jones anyway. When I was at high school, we used to have a film club where our teacher would show one film over 2 days. And that was the first time I saw Raiders of the Lost Ark. When that came out, 1981, I was 9. Was I? Yeah. So then 1984, was when Temple of Doom came out. So by that time, I was just really into the whole thing and I really wanted to see this. So me and my mate went to see it in the cinema. I think it was the first time I was allowed to go with a friend at night time. And it was opening night. And being 12 years old, we sat on the front row where I'd never sit now. But it was made it just more exciting because we were looking up at this. It just seemed massive and I was just so absorbed in it. And then, and obviously we'll talk about the film as we go through the show. But then as years went by, I mean, I'd watched it lots of times. I started to read that people didn't like it. And that's really a reason that I thought it needs revisiting. Yeah, it's got its controversies, which I never really saw at that age. And I just wanted to revisit it, really, because I haven't watched it in years. It's one of those films, and it's very similar to Back to the Future for me, is where I hold it very highly from a nostalgia point of view, really, but also because I think it's a good film. And it's very difficult to actually rewatch. I found it really hard to rewatch it this time. Not because it's bad, but because I'm so familiar with it.
Yeah.
To actually focus on it is very difficult. It was easy to keep drifting away from it, really. So this was a good exercise in going back and looking at something with a different hat on, really.
You, Robert, I assume you have a history with this franchise?
Oh, yes. I was 3 when this came out. You know, it's one of those franchises, like Star Wars, where you just grow up immersed in it, and it's quite hard to pinpoint when I first saw this. But I became really interested in it when my parents went to a flea market when I was probably about 6 or 7 years old. They came back with 2 behind-the-scenes making-of books, lots of publicity stills and behind-the-scenes of the VFX. And one was of David Lynch's Dune, which was quite a cool, you know, I was sort of like, wow, this is trippy. And then the other was Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. So a lot of the images from that book really captivated me. But then they had some behind-the-scenes stuff of, like, the models of the minecart, you know, and matte paintings and things. And so I got quite interested in it. But when we got assigned this movie, thinking back, I quite often would revisit Raiders. I'll really often revisit Last Crusade. I know it's not cool to say this, but I actually think Last Crusade's my favourite in the franchise. I just love the interplay between Sean Connery and Harrison Ford. But I very rarely go back to this. It will have met our sort of criteria of 15 years plus. I just haven't gone back to it. And I don't know if it's because it is the darker one. It's less joyous an experience.
Yeah. I mean, it's also less of a kind of a procedural. With the others, he's solving clues. Structurally, he's using his brain. This one, he just stumbles into everything and falls and literally keeps going. And then it ends. Yeah.
He's a kite dancing on the wind, to quote the guy from that Bond movie. when I watched it, I was like, the structure of this is odd, and the tonal shifts, and it sticks out like dog's balls in the franchise. But yeah, I mean, you know, the iconography of it. I've always loved Short Round. God, don't ask me what happened between 1935 and 1936.
That's my last question at the end of my note, is what do you think happened?
I know. Doesn't bear thinking about, does it?
Mine's very similar to yours, Andy, because we're of a similar age.
Yeah.
My claim to fame is I've seen all the Indiana Jones films at the cinema. All 4.
Wow.
Of them.
Well, so 5 now.
Yeah, well, I will see 5.
Yeah, okay.
I went to see Raiders when I was about 10, 11. Very much like you, just fell in love with it, just thought it was amazing.
Yeah.
And couldn't wait for the sequel to come out, Temple of Death, as it was called at the time.
Wow.
Went to see that when I was, well, it was 1984, so I would have been about 13. I don't remember anything problematic in it at the time because I was a 13-year-old living in West Wales.
Why would you?
Fine. It was just a rollicking adventure.
Yeah.
And of course, when the third one came out, exactly the same. This is probably the one that I have revisited the most. My rules are broken for this one.
Okay.
Because I have the DVD box set.
Okay.
And my kids, this is their favourite one.
Oh,
I do
wow.
watch this one quite regularly.
I think the last time I was on, I was choosing some films and I did have this as a maybe then. And Chris, you said, let's not watch that. I've just watched it twice recently with the kids.
Chris, you dirty bloody rotter.
Sorry. So I should really be out.
I'm out.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's one I've watched a lot. I might have some disagreements with you, Rob, because it's actually my favourite of the franchise. And you know,
Chris, I'll let you participate, but your score won't count.
No, that's fine.
I'm just kidding.
Well, interestingly, my favourite is the first one. So between us, we are like the Holy Trinity.
Well, Raiders, you know, it's like that and that for me with Raiders and Last Crusade. But if I've got a choice between chucking one in the DVD player, I'll probably go Last Crusade. Mm.
Well, you like doing the Charlemagne impersonation.
I do.
Yeah.
I remembered my Charlemagne.
Jamie Wall did send us a tweet when we said we were doing this film.
I missed that.
And he said something along the lines of, this is probably the most expensive film that was made on the back of a marriage separation.
Oh, yeah.
Because we all know that story.
Yes.
And that obviously lends to why this film does have its darker elements.
So in the making of, I mean, George Lucas actually says that in the making of.
Yeah.
And Spielberg says, well, George wanted this to be darker because when I agreed to direct Raiders, he told me I had to do three. He had three stories in mind, but that was bullshit.
Yep.
And he said, this one just has to be darker because, like, Empire Strikes Back, it's the dark one.
Mm.
Then it just kept getting darker and darker and darker. And George Lucas says, oh, well, I was going through a divorce at the time and I was in a really bad mood, so...
So, looking at the telltale signs, of course, there is... someone has their heart ripped out.
Yes.
there's an annoying bloody woman.
Who's been subjected to all kinds of torments.
Yeah, there is a woman who is punched in the face.
I know.
And also, it's really hurting the children.
It's about the children being torn away.
Yeah.
And the man's got to bring them back home.
He's one step away from Fathers for Justice with this film, isn't
he?
Really? But that's why the tone is really weird.
Yeah.
Because while it's also really, really dark, it's also kind of the most fun and slapstick.
Mm.
There's scenes where someone gets bonked on the head by a hammer and...
Yeah.
Which we will talk about is the dinner scene and things like that, which is, you know, all of that is frankly ridiculous.
Yeah.
And so to have that alongside some of the more grim elements, it's an uneven tone.
Yeah. The dinner scene was one of my favourite scenes as a kid. And rewatching it, what a masterful way of delivering exposition.
The editing on it is amazing.
Yeah. And then sounds and the, you know...
Yeah, because I know that there's boring exposition going on at the dinner table.
Yeah.
And I know that their intention was, well, no one's going to pay attention, so we have to do something at the same time.
Yeah.
So they very, very masterfully intercut it with the most ridiculous dinner scene since, I don't know, this is where we let it in, you say
Jesus
ridiculous.
Of Nazareth.
Jesus of Nazareth, yeah. Because I think they were going to do it, they were talking about it over a tiger hunt.
Yeah.
But I think even Spielberg went, no, we're not doing that.
No, yeah, I'm not staying long enough for the country for that.
And that's the thing that tricked me all these years, because I don't like boring up exposition, especially when I was 12. I've never really been able to see the dark tone or anything. I can see what people are saying. I can see that it's there and you've just described it. But I've always just looked past it and I've just been a big kid about this film forever.
Mm.
It's non-stop, isn't it? Even in those scenes, there's something funny going on, or there's something to keep you going. So I understand why your girls like it best, because it's just...
Well, they're horror fans.
Yeah, they're horror fans.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's very... Yeah, and I'm a big horror fan, and I think that's part of it as well.
Yeah, to quote Simon Love from our previous episode, it's a cartoon.
Yeah.
Mm.
It really is. That's why The Ridiculous works with the darkness, because it is just a live-action cartoon, more so than the other two.
Yeah, and there's so many dark things going on in Tom and Jerry and Roadrunner and all the things I used to be watching. And it's got a lot of the humour of Laurel and Hardy and Harold Lloyd and all that slapstick inventiveness of chases and using everything in the environment, really making the most out of, like, the minecart scene.
Absolutely. I mean, they use, like, wooden bollards to derail a minecart, and that's straight out of Buster Keaton's General, isn't it?
It's
directly lifted from that, so I know what you mean.
But that opening scene, the credits, really, I love that.
I do too.
That is such a
fabulous,
great way to start. Even from the Paramount Mountains into the gong.
Like a rank gong.
Yeah. Presumably that gong is called Qui Gong Jin.
Oh.
Being that it's Club Obi-Wan.
Oh, very good. Very good. Because it's really disarming, that opening scene, because the last thing we've seen of Indy in the previous film is it's really downbeat. It's really, oh, they don't know what they've got here. It's terrible.
Yeah.
We've been led to believe that this one is going to be the dark one.
Yeah.
Because there was trouble with the certification. You know, at one point, the BBFC were going to make it an 18 and all this sort of stuff. And then they open it with a musical number. Brilliant. Really audacious.
Yeah. Because PG-13 came out about 2 months after this. Eh? It was Us and Gremlins.
Because of this, I think. Yeah.
Kate Capshaw, she's great in this. I know that the reviews were quite unkind to her. I can understand criticisms of the character and the way the characters are written. But she plays what's on the page really, really well. I think
she's fantastic. She's really good physical comedy. During the musical number where she kind of trips up the step and kind of looks a little bit pissed off. She's so good in this.
And she learnt how to sing Cole Porter's Anything Goes in Mandarin.
Mm-hmm. And there's one cut that goes on for about three verses. Yeah. She obviously had to learn the whole thing.
Yeah, she learnt the song. And it's just such a visually striking way to open the film. You know, singing Anything Goes in Mandarin. Obviously, it's a mission statement for the film, Anything Goes.
Yeah.
But even just the way they she retreats into that dragon's mouth, and then they go into like this kind of TARDIS like completely physically impossible kind of area.
Yeah.
Where they do even more extreme Busby Berkeley stuff. Guys, just suspend your disbelief. Mm. This is just go with it.
Yeah, exactly.
Anything goes, guys.
It's a very good way of saying that you said, like, anything goes, but also, it's not real.
None of this is real.
That was the moment in the film, well, it's right at the start, obviously, but that's the, I was, my jaw was on the floor straight away. I was grinning straight away when, because I grew up with being with my grandma a lot, and we watched musicals together, so I'd seen all those dance routines. So to have that in a film, plus horror and a roller coaster ride at age 12, it was just perfect. This why I've got so much love for it. The bit I really love straight away is how they display the title of the film. Willie's stood in front of it.
Yeah, and her arms go in front of the lettering, yeah.
Yeah, she's covering up some of the font. And I think, well, who would do that now? I just love that as well. Visually, it's amazing.
And then three of the coolest baddies. I really like Lao Shay and his sons.
I do too.
They're so well played. I love his little giggles of like delight when he and ridicule at Indiana Jones.
Yeah, they are good. So we need to talk about the next title card.
Oh, okay.
After the credit end.
Yeah.
And it says Shanghai 1935, which is obviously a year before Raiders.
Yeah.
What do we think about that?
Well, it's not a proper prequel, is it? The reason that they did that was they just didn't want Nazis as the baddies. I would posit that you could probably still come up with a story where Nazis weren't the baddies in 1937. Like, but George Lucas couldn't. So he said, just like, for the sake of it, let's make it a prequel. But it's not a prequel in that it doesn't foreshadow anything that happens in Raiders.
Yeah.
It doesn't explain anything.
In fact, it contradicts things, I think, from Raiders. Such as, like, in the Raiders, he doesn't believe in any of the magic mumbo-jumbo. Yeah, he's seen a lot of that here in this film.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. This film, he's supposed to, the arc, if there is such, no pun intended, the arc is really like, he's not a mercenary, he's going to just do the right thing for, you know, the village, he's not going to steal the stones, he's going to give it back to them.
It's his transition from fortune and glory into doing the right thing. Yeah. And obviously he was more righteous when it got to Raiders. I suppose that's the only journey.
Yeah.
But of course the other reason is, if it was later, people might be a bit disappointed that Marion's still not around, because she was brilliant.
I guess so. It's like a James Bond film, isn't it? It's another adventure featuring Indiana Jones. Don't think too hard about it. Don't think about the continuity.
Yeah.
But yeah, as we've mentioned, my one worry is what happened to this kid who loves him.
I know he survived because in the extra material...
He was supposed to be in Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, wasn't he?
Well, was he? Well, in the extra material, you know, the diamond at the beginning of the... Because that was always a thing, I thought, why is Indy going after just a normal standard diamond? But that diamond apparently is in the young Indiana Jones Chronicles. There's an episode about that. Mm. And then obviously they lose it in the Bucket of Ice in this film. But in 1957, this is somewhere in the Indiana Jones diaries, Indiana Jones gets a letter from Short Round saying he's found the diamond again. So he still survived.
Presumably being known as tall, oblong.
Tall, thin. Yeah. Tall, straight. Large and straight.
Yeah.
Because I was a little bit worried because in the start of the film, Indy does have another friend from the Orient.
Yes.
Who helps him along here, which is David Yip, the Chinese detective.
Yeah.
Also in A View to a Kill.
He is in A View to a Kill. And Brookside, he's been as well. But he comes to quite a sticky end, and I was just concerned that that's what happens.
Yeah.
Is that they latch onto Indy, they die, and he just gets another one.
Yeah.
Well, like a goldfish.
Throughout the franchise, they are sort of like the Doctor's companions, aren't they?
Yeah.
So even in Crystal Skull, you've got the whole Ray Winstone character, which you've never met before. As Abner Ravenwood, obviously Marion. And is that John Hurt? Who's the John Hurt?
No, Abner's not in it.
Yeah, so John, and then the John Hurt character.
John Hurt is Ox.
Yeah, Ox.
Professor Oxley.
Yeah, so throughout the whole franchise.
Which is nice, because it hints that there's been several adventures that we don't know about.
It makes reference to sort of past adventures, which... But it's kind of a George Lucas-y thing almost, isn't it? It's kind of like part of the...
There's a universe.
Yeah.
There's a history,
Hinting at a wider...
Yeah.
But
it basically suggests that this isn't the only adventure he's ever been on. There's been loads.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's a nice touch.
But he was just a child, and he's not with him a year later. And he bought him as well.
Yeah.
So it was a bit odd.
Maybe he sold him.
Yeah.
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 But yeah, I did read that initially in an early draft of Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, when it was known as Indiana Jones and the Sorcerer from Mars.
Yeah.
there was a wedding scene. It wasn't Marion Ravenwood, though. It was another character who was supposed to be marrying. But Willie Scott, Short Round, someone else, maybe Salah, was sort of like supposed to show up at the wedding. Yeah.
That's the ending of Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, isn't
it? It is a little
Where
bit,
everyone
yeah.
turns up, yeah. Wow. I'm quite pleased they didn't do that. Or it would have spoiled the film if they'd have done that.
Well, I choose to believe Short Round lives.
Well, now he's an Oscar winner. Mm. This is prime time for Lucasfilm or Disney Plus to do like a Short Round Chronicles and have a little adventures with him in.
Yeah, but I fucking hate the man-child thing because I've just seen footage of him acting like he's 10 years old again. Ooh. It's like the Roberto Benigni thing.
Oh, dear.
You know, it's like, I don't like seeing 50-year-old men being that excited and...
Well, you're not going to get it with me.
Like when he met Harrison Ford at the Oscars or something, and he sort of like just...
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just like, calm down. That should be your new name. That's your character's name now. Calm down.
Because I think I've revised my view of Indy's assistance in this one.
Okay.
Because I used to absolutely hate Willie Scott, and I used to hate Short Round as well.
Oh, okay.
I just found him really irritating.
Ah.
Yeah. And that went on for quite some time, but...
He's the actual hero of this movie.
He is, yeah. He is, actually.
He's
like
R2-D2.
He really is. I've got this kind of newfound affection for him. I mean, Willie Scott is annoying, but she's meant to be the polar opposite of Marion.
Yeah.
Whereas Marion wasn't afraid of anything, and she was really self-assured. Willie is the complete opposite of that.
Yeah.
And Shorty is just a little kid.
I like him. I think he's brilliant in this.
Yeah, I love him immediately. As soon as he comes in, I love him.
My favourite scene as well is apparently one they improvised, which is the cheating at the game of cards thing.
Mm.
And I just think they're brilliant in that. And he's really brilliant in that.
Yeah.
I mean, you made me poor.
Because he was another of those. Whenever there's a child actor, it's always, he didn't turn up for the audition.
Yeah,
he came with his brother. And that's the same for him as well.
Yeah, okay.
It was his brother that was actually auditioning, but he was coaching him on the side. And they said when he was auditioning, they couldn't take their eyes off him. You come in, so we'll kick your brother out and you're in.
That's that old sort of Britain's Got Talent sort of story or whatever.
Or Andrew Strong turned up with his dad. Yeah.
But Indy's like James Bond at the beginning of this.
The
one
the
tuxedo. Yeah, I like it when things don't just copy it again. And that is my problem really with some of the later films here, Last Crusade and Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. I think they are aiming to be a bit more like Raiders.
Oh, totally.
But Temple of Doom doesn't do that. It just does what its own thing, and that's what I actually love about it. And that white jacket was as far from what you expected.
It's a lot harder to be racist when your baddies are Nazis.
yeah, that's the thing, isn't it?
It's a weird one, though, because even the MacGuffin or whatever, the plot device, right? Raiders, the Ark of the Covenant, that's a thing, okay? Mm. And the whole kind of like Nazis getting into the mysticism thing. The Holy Grail, that's another well-known artifact. Again, the Nazis. Even Crystal Skulls, like, okay, we're getting a bit wacky here, but I do remember the episode of Arthur C. Clarke's Mysterious Universe that did talk about Crystal Skulls. But the Shankara Stones?
I mean, I don't know. Are they a legendary thing?
No, they're not. They're not. It's totally made up.
They didn't even get into the title this time, did they? Like, they did. No, all the artifacts are in the titles of the others apart from this one. The Temple of Doom, and is that just an opinion? Or is that the name of the place, the Temple of Doom?
It's a good name.
Yeah.
There's a lot of time spent in a temple. It's not a nice temple.
No, it's quite doomy.
Yeah, there's quite people meet their doom in it. Especially that poor chap that gets his heart taken out. He meets his doom there.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just one of these pulpy titles that George Lucas likes to kind of come up with, isn't it? It's like the Phantom Menace or...
Yeah, it's the, as he always goes on about, the serials of the 1930s. Yeah, they've got that kind of comic book title to them, yeah.
But yeah, it's an odd deviation from your sort of Judeo-Christian religious artifacts that are well known culturally to this made up thing.
Because I'm not that knowledgeable about various religious artifacts and stuff, so I couldn't think what they could have used in place of it. Like the Turin Shroud or something. I don't know. Well, we know what that is.
Yeah.
That would be a crap episode, wouldn't it? Just over there, mate.
Holding it up. Ironing it. No, don't iron it. It belongs in a museum. Not in your wardrobe.
So I don't know. The Shankara Stones, they're just potatoes, aren't they?
Real hot ball potatoes.
Yeah.
Hot roasted potatoes. Apparently the name Shankara is based on like an 8th century scholar who philosophized about all this Hinduism. But essentially it came from the writer's interest in India. William Hike and Gloria Katz.
Gloria Katz, yep.
Yep. Of Howard the Duck fame.
Oh, you've read my notes.
And I think Best Defense.
Wow.
Yeah, but of course they were American Graffiti as well. And Larry Kasdan said fuck off, didn't he?
Yes, he did. He said it was way too mean-spirited and he wanted nothing to do with it, yeah.
He said they're both going through some fucked up times in their lives and they've basically taken a giant shit on on the page and on Indiana Jones. And no, I don't want to be part of this demonic hellscape.
Is that how he put it?
Sort of. Yeah, it's not far from that.
Yeah. I suppose that one of the other things in this is the most memorable scenes are all offcuts from Raiders. The gong and the nightclub. Yeah. That was, I think, Indy was, the Staff of Ra was in two pieces and he had to go to Shanghai first before he went to Nepal. The raft on the plane is taking him out, the minecart ride. And so the rest of it is, it does feel a little bit sometimes in getting from A to B. Yeah. So it's stitching those together.
Yeah.
Because other than that, I think probably one of the only other memorable scenes is the bridge at the end.
That's quite a
for this, which is amazing.
An iconic scene, yeah.
But the rest of it is sort of secondhand.
Yeah. The brutality is evident quite early on, isn't it? Like, just the way that Indy grabs Willy and uses her as a hostage and holds like a big fork to her ribs. It is almost, if that first scene is kind of meant to be a sort of an homage to Bond, it's kind of like, wow. Definitely can't imagine Roger Moore doing that.
Dalton would have.
Well, no, but he was always quite lovely with the ladies.
Didn't he kind of like rough someone up to make it look like she'd been roughed up or something and then threw her in as a distraction? He does that in The Living Daylights.
Does he do that in The Living Daylights?
I think so. But he wouldn't do it.
You can imagine
normally,
Connery doing it. But yeah. And then, of course, the famous kebab to the chest.
It's good.
That's really brutal,
That's the first horror moment, I think. That's like a really brutal death, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's quite a few parts in here where I start to have different feelings about Indy himself. He's maybe not the heroic nice guy. He has got a darker side to him.
He always is, though, throughout the whole franchise. I think there's really ambiguous moments with Indy throughout the whole franchise.
He doesn't mind gunning people down. He's okay with that. He's quite comfortable with that.
In fact, they make a point of it with that whole scene with the guy with the, you know, I know that was because Harrison Ford had dysentery. Raiders, but he's not going to do the honourable thing. If he's got a gun, he'll shoot you. Hmm. But he's a grumpy fucker. He's always grumpy with women.
Yeah.
You know, he's quite a bit of a chauvinist with women.
Much more of a womaniser in this one. He calls a doll all the time.
Yeah, sweetheart and just, stuff like that.
There's a lot of disrespectful.
He's because he's really buff in this.
Yeah, he did a lot of weights.
He did.
As soon as he found out he'd have to take his shirt off, he was in the gym like 4 hours a day.
Yeah.
Until he did his back in, obviously.
Yeah, he didn't want it to be Indiana Jones and the Temple of Moobs.
Yeah, he looks at his best here, doesn't he, Peak? I've got a back crush on him here.
When he's in that in that scene on the bridge where, you know, is the arm of his shirt has been ripped off. That is a big arm.
Yeah.
It's a big arm. No, she hasn't got one big arm, she's got two big arms, but you can see that one.
It's his wanking arm.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. But then we're treated to after the fight. A very nice car chase where we first meet Short Round with his blocks on his shoes, his blocker boots.
Yeah. Tom Cruise would have seen that and gone, ooh, it's a good idea.
Yeah. Maybe I can drive a car for that. That's how Days of Thunder got made. And, of course, they're met by an indistinguishable Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah. His little shorts and his British accent. He does quite well, I reckon.
Oh, he's fine. Yeah, he's good. And then a little bit, aren't you Willie Scott, the world famous singer? So we know that she is somebody.
Yeah.
That's fine.
I was always confused how they managed to get 3 tickets. And it only just dawned on me that one of the tickets was for Wuhan, the guy who died.
Oh, of course.
I'm assuming the plane tickets. Yeah, but I always thought, when did they ring to add Willie onto the plane? And I realised, they did have a 3rd ticket. But Short Round never asks about him, does he? He never asks, where's Wuhan?
Yeah.
How is he not coming back with us?
Like, where's my uncle? Where's the guy who raised me?
Right.
He promised he's going to take me to the park tomorrow. What? Where's he gone?
He's behind us. He's on his way.
He's coming. He's getting the next plane.
Going back to what you were saying about the use of a gun, I like how they get rid of the gun as well. Willie drops it out of the car in the car chase so that he's never got that opportunity again to use the gun. And even there's a gag about that at the end, isn't there, near the bridge, where they try to repeat that sword fight thing.
Literally Chekhov's gun.
Yeah.
And then we get a very nice bit of comic timing, because even though we've referred to the Chinese gangster as Lao Chi, Indy's never called him that.
No.
And the first time he calls him that is when he gets on the plane and goes, "Nice try, Lao Chi."
Yeah.
And shuts the door. And of course it says, "Lao Chi, yeah, freight." And it's great. It's brilliant.
It's a very elaborate way of killing someone, though.
Yeah.
Like, did they really have to ditch the plane? They could have done something, but I know you can't really fire a gun in a plane, but they could have killed them.
Imagine when Lao Chi's two men come back and they say, "Yeah, we got rid of him."
"Where's my plane?"
"Brilliant, yeah. Did you shoot them?" "No." "Did you smother them? Stab them? Throw them out of the plane?" "No, we crashed the plane into a mountain." And he would go, "Would you like some champagne?"
And why did they wait till they got to India?
Yeah.
They must have been going there themselves.
Yeah, because we see a really good, the good old Indiana Jones map with a red line moving across. And they stopped to refuel at least twice.
Yeah.
So yeah, when they took off.
It shows Burma, doesn't it? They go past.
Yeah.
It's quite a way to go. So these two pilots have had to hitchhike all the way back to.
Yeah. And they've parachuted into the mountains.
Yes. And they're like high-fiving each other. "Yeah, we did it."
Yeah. Where are we?
"We should have thought this through." "How much water have you got?" "Water?"
"Left it on the plane with this. We've got loads of chicken." Oh.
Yeah, because it's funny. I didn't actually realise or kind of remember until rewatching this that the whole setup is just this accidental. They literally drop into this situation.
Yeah.
There's no agency, really, at all.
None whatsoever. Everything is by accident. Yeah. So not like the others, where he's approached to do something.
Yeah.
"Go and find this. Find the book. Find your father."
Yeah.
With this, no. He just literally falls into everything. Yeah.
We don't have that kind of comforting scene where he's teaching at his university.
No.
Yeah, and the person approaches him and says, "Yeah, come and..." Yeah, we don't get the nice
thing. But I was glad to see the back of that. That's that is why I struggle with Raiders. As a 12-year-old, I just want to get to the action. I'm so childish with this one, but when they keep going back to the universe, I was so glad not to see the university in this. So I didn't mind that they just fell into everything. It's an absolutely ridiculous story, but if I'd written a story as a 12-year-old, it's probably how I would write it.
Yeah.
So I think that's why it always appeals, really.
That's a very good point, because the script is basically, "And then this happened, happened, and then this happened." So it is like it's written by a kid.
So I always love those university scenes, because it's like the two sides of the Indiana Jones coin, you know.
Yeah,
he's actually this academic trying to earn a crust lecturing kids. It's like a secret identity.
Yes.
But then he puts on the hat and the leather jacket and the bullwhip and he's this adventurer. This one, you kind of, if you hadn't seen Raiders, it would just almost be like a Chuck Norris character or something.
I mean, that's what I mean with this one. His character is, there's no academia. It is going for the diamond, going for the treasure.
Yeah.
And so that's, like I said, another reason why it's potentially set beforehand, because he was a bit more about that then, rather than being the teacher.
Yeah.
But there are other characters sort of allude to his famous archaeology skills.
My name's Jones. Oh, the famous archaeology. It's such an uncommon name, isn't it?
Yeah. I love this world, this alternate world where there are famous archaeologists.
Yeah.
I mean, other than maybe, I don't know, Lord Carnarvon, was he an archaeologist? He just discovered the bones.
I suppose he discovered the tomb, didn't he?
He puts on a voice when he's in his school or when he's talking about archaeology.
Yeah.
Like you said about superhero, like Batman's got a different voice.
Yeah.
He's suddenly got a very hushed, like a telephone voice when he's doing the exposition at the meal. I don't like his voice then all of a sudden.
Right. He does put on his tweed.
It's his Harrison Ford voice. Because very much like you, I watched the extras for this in the making of. And whenever you see Harrison Ford being interviewed, there's Jeremy Thomas. And that's what he's like when he's being Dr. Jones.
Yeah.
And you're right, he certainly is during that dinner party scene. It's all very, if I offended you, I'm sorry.
He's
got little spectacles on too.
Yeah.
Talking about how they want to cut off his penis.
I appreciate those scenes more now I'm older. I can sit through the academic stuff. I just like the action more. just a big kid about it.
Fun, of course.
I can't say I've heard too many people go, I like Indiana Jones movies, but I just can't stand the academic stuff. Like, they're a bit dry.
Well, I'm the opposite. I think there should be more.
More academic stuff.
I want one Indiana Jones film where they're just sitting in a room.
Yeah.
Just talking about stuff, and there's no adventure. There's something to chat.
Yeah, like one of his assistants, instead of like, you know, John Rhys Davies, it should have been James Burke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'd be like my dinner with Andre, my dinner with Indy.
Yeah.
And they're just sitting there just talking about, stuff.
Yeah, I agree.
It'd be great. Yeah. Which is probably what the fifth one's like, I don't know. So yes, they are in the plane, as we know, and they're by themselves. The fuel has been dumped and they're about to crash into a mountain. And this is where Indy reveals he can't fly.
Yeah.
So luckily in the next 3 years he managed to take sufficient flying lessons because he's able to fly Sean Connery around in a biplane
quite comfortably. Of course he is, isn't he?
And of course then they do this bit. They bounce jump out around. Of the plane in an inflatable raft.
Bounce around from place to place. Mm-hmm.
Yep. I will say what everybody these days is saying, which is, don't come to me with the fridge in the crystal skull, because this is just as ridiculous.
Yeah, it is.
And I quite like the fridge.
I wouldn't go so far as to say I like the fridge. I don't mind the fridge.
Hmm.
The problems I had with Crystal Skull, I quite like Crystal Skull. I really love the first sort of half hour.
Hmm.
Biggest problem I had with that was Shia LaBeouf was sort of anachronistic. He just didn't feel of that time. Just don't fucking like him. The silliness of the interdimensional alien crystal skull.
Yeah. Because, as India always says, research. I love my research. Yeah. And as part of research for this, I rewatched Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Yes, okay.
I watched that last weekend. It's not as bad as everybody says. It's not a great film.
Yeah.
It's not a good Indiana Jones film. If it was whatever Brendan Fraser's character is called in The Mummy, Rick Mummy, and The Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, people would like it.
Yeah, yeah.
But because it's an Indiana Jones film, your expectations are much higher, and therefore it just gets not very well received.
Too much CGI, eh? I just remember the jungle scene with the little swashbuckling monkey.
There's the CGI gophers and all this sort of stuff. When it works, I really like it.
Yeah.
The motorbike chase scene through the university and through that's the city streets is really great.
The warehouse at the start.
The warehouse is good fun.
Yeah, that's fun. Yeah.
There's some nice little touches, some little nods to previous films, which don't really look that obvious. There's a bit where they're on the motorbike, where him and, as we later learn, his son are on a motorbike, and they've just knocked somebody out of a car or whatever.
Yeah.
And Shia LaBeouf turns around to him and does this little smirk. And Indy looks really pissed off at him.
Yeah.
And it's a complete callback to him and Sean Connery, where they do exactly the same thing on a motorbike. So there's some lovely little smiles in there that. It doesn't hit you over the head with it. Mm. But there are scenes where nothing happens for a very long time.
Yeah.
He says, oh, we must go to South America. And that takes about 45 minutes and nothing happens.
Yeah.
They go and try and find John Hurt and all this silly stuff.
Yeah.
And there's too many chums in it. It becomes a bit Scooby-Doo.
Yeah.
Four in Last Crusade is enough. With this one, they've added another one and it just gets silly.
I mean, one of those was Denham Elliott, you know, who's just fucking brilliant.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so...
With this, they've got a crazy John Hurt.
Yeah.
Shia LaBeouf from Ray Winstone.
I think I've only seen that one twice. I'm going to have to rewatch it before the new film comes out. So hopefully I'll find a bit more in it. It had a great trailer. I remember being really excited by the trailer, which is often the way. You saw the shadow and that was like spine tingling. If you're a fan. So, but it promised more than it could deliver, sadly.
The new one's getting savaged.
Yeah, it's not being received very warmly, is
it? No, it sounds terrible, actually. Sounds like they're going, like James Mangold's bringing almost like the Logan vibe to it, which is, oh yeah, his life turned to shit. Because that's what we all want to see from Indiana Jones, right? It's a lighthearted adventure.
I think that is basically it, isn't it? He's close to retirement, and as a complete flip from when all the kids couldn't take their eyes off him, now nobody's interested. And he's just like this loser in the who teaches archaeology.
Yeah, and he's like single again, and and his son's not around, and he's in a
We're all okay with that.
But he might not be. But
I will go and see it because I have to complete the five.
Yeah,
in the cinema. Oh, yeah. I've got to do it.
I only went Crystal Skull in the cinema.
Oh. Well, at least you saw the best one.
So the bouncy, bloody, inflatable...
Oh, yeah, we're still on the raft. Yeah. So it goes down a mountain, off a cliff, down a river, which is all good fun. And then it sort of slows down and they're greeted on the shore by an Indian elder.
Yeah.
Who takes them to their village. The very barren and dry village.
Yeah.
And all of that is in the first 20 minutes. You get so much packed in. I mean, it's quite a lengthy opening, actually, but it also packs a lot into that time. That is... The moment where they're drifting down the river, that is the bit where I think, oh, it's slowing down now. Please speed up again.
Yeah, yeah.
So there is a little bit of a period where I always like to say this is a roller coaster, but there is a bit of a period now at this point where there's a lot of more exposition, but they do put a bit of humour in that keeps it going.
This is the academic bit that you don't like, but it's got Indian elders rather than Porkins from Star Wars to talk to. Yeah. So they brought some food. Well, they go into the village and everyone's kind of got their hands all over them and grabbing them. Because he is Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
I think I would too.
Yeah.
But they give them some food and, of course, Willy can't eat it. It reminds me of that bit in Three Amigos where Chevy Chase says, have you got anything besides Mexican food?
Yeah. And Andy says, you're embarrassing me. And you're humiliating them or something? You're offending them and you're embarrassing me.
Yeah. So the elder says that we will take you to Delhi, but first you've got to go to Pankot Palace.
Yeah. We'll take you to Delhi, but first you've got to spend about 5 days shitting yourself after after that meal. And then when you can walk again,
yeah,
we'll take you to Pankot Palace.
It's silly. We all know the famous scene from Raiders where, because he had dysentery, he shoots the guy because he was going to shit himself. Have you heard the story about John Rhys-Davies?
No.
There was a scene they were shooting where, after Salah is captured helping Indy, they're going to execute him. So he's up against a tree and they're going to shoot him. And they started filming this.
Yeah.
And of course, he had dysentery as well. And so Spielberg said to him, well, for the shot, can you just bend down a bit so we've got you in camera?
Yeah.
And he shat himself. So they had to cut the whole scene. I think they should have left it in. That would have been brilliant.
Yeah.
It's come out of the belly of this beast. Anyway, that was a little aside. So,
yeah.
But in this case, their tummies are fine for now.
Yeah.
But the elder says there's much darkness in Pankot Palace.
The dark light is shining
darkened
again.
And so he says they've nicked our stone, they've nicked the kids.
He talks in sort of ancient, wise elder.
Yeah. And that's because he couldn't speak English.
Yeah.
And Spielberg was literally off camera going, there is much darkness. So he's going, there is much darkness. So he's literally doing it phonetically for him.
Yeah.
He's brilliant, though, isn't he? Such a presence in the film, isn't he, that guy?
A great hairstyle.
That elder.
Really good hair, yeah. Gilly Goulden.
Yeah.
Also, what I did like about this scene is it sort of goes back to Jaws, where Indy's doing all these movements with his hands and Shorty's behind him copying his hand movements and stuff. And that comes back quite, well, not amusingly, quite brutally later on in the film.
Well, they've kind of twinned quite a bit, aren't they, throughout the film.
It happens again where Indy's beating the shit out of someone and so is Shorty.
Yeah. Well, and Indy's getting whipped and so.
Yeah. So they do. They decide to go to the village. Or after a child comes back. A child escapes the mines. He's looking a bit tired.
Very skinny, tired boy. You're flopping around boulders.
Yeah.
You're sort of flopping from one boulder to the next.
He's quite floppy, isn't he?
He's like, what? I just imagine Spielberg going, no, floppier.
Floppier, more intense. Yeah. But he turns up and he's got this handy little bit of sort of expositional tapestry in his hand, which talks about Shiva and the Shankara stones.
Yeah.
And that's where Indy says, you know, fortune and glory.
Oh, I hate that bit. God, I really hate that scene where he said the line delivery of fortune and glory, kid. Fortune and glory.
He doesn't even put the emphasis on, so you know he's going to repeat it, does he?
It's the most wooden line delivery I think Harrison Ford has ever given in his career.
Because
it's actually quite a important...
He should be excited about it.
Yeah. He should have a little wry smile. Yeah. I don't believe it for a second that he actually wants fortune and glory.
And he shouldn't be doubting himself at this point.
No.
But they decide to go. They walked along with some amusing elephants.
Yes, some good comedy elephants. Yeah.
What is that stuff she puts on the elephant's head?
Perfume or something?
Mm. Hopefully it was water while they were shooting it, because that can be very nice for his skin.
No, fucking elephants with scalpers. Fucking...
Yeah.
But I'm sure it probably wasn't actually Chanel number 5 that...
Yeah. But... Yeah, let's hope not.
But yeah, some good elephant...
Acting.
Some good elephant business.
Yeah, I think they were from some local elephant orphanage that they used them for, so very much like Short Round, they bought them.
Yeah.
And they used them until they didn't need them anymore.
Oh.
Very much like Short Round.
Maybe that's what happens to him.
Back to the orphanage.
But you know that one that keeps bonking Willy on the head when she's trying to... It actually looks like Kate Capshaw's getting genuinely fucked off.
She's just really good performance in this. Yeah.
But, is that actually an elephant behind her bonking her on the head?
It looks real.
It looks real.
It doesn't look like a sock puppet, you know, like the emu or something. You know?
It doesn't look like a big...
A big draft excluder that they're bashing her over the head with, She also says she didn't really read the script properly.
Okay.
So when she turned up, she didn't know that she had to act alongside snakes and bugs, which she was terrified of both of them.
Yeah.
So
she thought she was doing like a Merchant Ivory type.
Yes. Yeah, true.
Yeah.
So I know that in the scene with this, she was absolutely petrified. I think she was actually, she was drugged up when she did a lot of the scenes with the snake.
Okay, wow. Yeah.
And so maybe that had something to do with it as well. She was either terrified or she was stoned when she was doing this bit. So that probably fed into it as well, that reaction.
Wow. Great way to sort of meet your husband.
Yeah.
A bit of a power imbalance there. He's directing you. He's drugging you. Subjecting you to, you know.
It's not a Polanski film.
No, it's like Hitchcock, sort of.
Yeah. Yeah, what do you think of all the screaming? Because it gets a lot of bad press, but I don't mind it so much, to be honest. But she does scream a lot in this film. I wondered if her name was something to do with that, because she's meant to be Wilhelmina. I thought maybe the Wilhelm scream is maybe what she's doing.
She's named after a dog.
Spielberg's dog.
Yeah.
Was Willie.
Yeah. Yeah. And Short Round is the writer's dog.
Yes.
And of course Indiana was George Lucas's dog.
Yeah. And Indiana Jones's son is called Mutt.
Yeah, wow.
You see? That's quite clever.
Yeah, it is.
Sorry, we're back to Crystal Skull again. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. But yeah, the screaming is intentionally annoying. It's meant to be that way. And again, it does sort of go back to those 1930s damsel in distress kind of things, because I suppose it is a period piece, isn't it?
Guess so.
And they're making it as if it was set in the 30s, and that's what people in those films would have been like in the 30s.
To me, it more feels like an 80s loud, obnoxious type thing. Bombastic. Yeah.
But again, they were just going for the polar opposite of Marion, who would never scream much. Yeah. But I think, I did also read that the elephant ate her dress.
Oh, yes, it did. Yeah.
The only dress, which she hadn't worn yet for anything goes.
Yeah. She couldn't dance in it either.
No. I know. It's a nice dress, though. Yeah, it's very nice in it. Very fetching.
Would you have eaten it, Chris?
I'd have eaten chips out of it, yeah.
Coughing up diamantes for.
God! Well, you see the elephant shit in the dark, wouldn't you? That's all right. So they get to the palace, and obviously their guides leg it. They won't go any near it.
No.
Because they see this...
sort of petrified... Well, they're quite petrified.
Yeah, they are terrified, yeah. Sort of they see a bloody idol.
A mummified, it's a semi-mummified sort of corpse.
Yeah.
Sort of, yeah.
Yeah. I just wrote bloody idol.
Yeah.
Singing Moni Moni.
Yeah. It was hot in the city tonight. Yeah.
But they get to the matte painting of Pancott Palace.
Yeah.
Because they couldn't use the Indian Palace because they weren't allowed to film in India.
Yeah. Now, why weren't they allowed to film in India?
Because the Indian government read the script. That's the answer,
it's
really.
It's funny, isn't it? You can see a lot of people would assume that it's accepted that, you know, this is a problematic film these days. But a lot of people may have assumed that back then it was fine. And it's only through our, you know, modern sensibilities that we kind of think, oh, it's a little bit... Yeah, it's slightly racist. No, actually, Indians...
The Indians didn't like
the it. The Indian back then realised how fucking offensive it was
to them. The defence that the film crew said was that the Indian government at no point ever like anyone saying anything bad about their religions and their beliefs, which obviously this film does quite a lot. And they didn't like the use of the word Maharaja. They insisted on that being taken out. And that's when they went, sod it, we'll go to Sri Lanka then.
They also just make up a whole lot of shit.
Yeah.
The thuggy cult. Like, so Gunga Din, I believe, sort of influenced this. But the thuggies were basically really just kind of like criminals. They were sort of robbers and murderers, and they weren't this sort of demonic kind of like... This is basically like a devil-worshipping cult.
Yeah.
They got like voodoo dolls in there. What the fuck? That's kind of weird. Yeah. There's a whole lot of dark, evil shit in there. And then the British are kind of come in as like the cavalry at the end. That's really aged out.
I had issues with that, yeah. Where Delbert Grady turns up. And corrects them.
Yeah, I think you're a little bit tone deaf if you've got the British in India coming to save the day at the end, yeah.
Yeah, I can see where you're coming from.
But yeah, I mean, you know, I didn't let that spoil my fun.
No,
but,
it still makes a smashing film.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they get to the palace and they're met by Chatar Lal, the Prime Minister.
Yes, well, also famous from the Street Fighter movie. He was Dalton. Oh.
It was me thinking you were going to say, like, Gandhi or Beautiful Laundrette. He was Buddha of Suburbia.
He was Dalsam in Street Fighter.
Well, I'm sure he'd want to be remembered for that as well. Yeah. I did chuckle a lot where Indy introduces his companions as Miss Scott and Mr. Round. Yeah.
Apparently, just back to the elephants, in the novelisation, short round. You know how he says his little baby elephant, you're my best friend, you're my best friend?
Yeah.
Apparently in the novelization, he believes that that is the reincarnation of his dead brother.
What? What, the elephant believes?
Yeah, the elephant.
No,
Short Round believes. Short Round believes.
Like, anything goes with this, doesn't it?
So Short Round believes the elephant is the reincarnation. I can just imagine the author who was doing the novelization. Like, I've got a couple of pages to fill here. Yeah. I know.
Reincarnation. That's the only Indian stereotype we haven't done yet.
Sure. Yeah, Short Round thinks the elephant's his brother. Cool, man. It's not going to hold the story up at all.
Now, that's the story I want to see in the Short Round Chronicles.
Yeah.
It's him with his elephant on adventures, thinking he's his brother. Maybe that's brilliant.
Maybe he went back into the jungle to get the elephant.
Sharing bunk beds. It would be great fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what happened, yeah. Maybe he lived in the jungle like Mowgli with his elephant brother.
Maybe he dies, gets stomped by an elephant. Oh, they fight like brothers.
His brother Dumbo round. Yeah. Lovely. So they stay for dinner, and there's music and dancing. There's the typical Indian dancing is going on. I did like it where a couple of them chase Shorty, and he runs away screaming. That was kind of fun. And then we get the famous dinner scene.
Yeah. What I would say is as they approach Pangkok Palace, when they get to, and there's lots of ominous shots of bats flying around.
Yes.
To me, this is when it feels almost like a Hammer horror.
Yeah.
They've got to the haunted castle.
They've got to Dracula's castle.
Yeah, they've got to Dracula's castle. The whole next act, really. You're in a horror movie, really, I think.
I think so.
Horror comedy.
Which is the best kind of horror, as we know. Yeah. So the dinner scene.
Yeah.
As we know, Indy is chatting with the very youthful Maharaja about stolen children.
The very plummy, high-pitched voice of Maharaja.
Yeah. Well, all the Maharajas were educated at Oxford and stuff, as we know.
Yeah.
As we know from the Adam Sandler murder mystery films.
It used to be the scariest thing in this movie. It used to be me hearing him talk for the first time.
Because it's not his voice. He's overdubbed.
Yeah, but who's dubbing him?
A small girl.
Audrey Hepburn.
Joe Pasquale. There was a guy outside in a turban who has got a very high, like a bit of a Muppet high pitched voice as well.
Yeah, there is.
I can't remember what he says.
The stones are over here.
Sounds like Kermit.
It sounds like Kermit.
I'm gonna watch it now.
Just want to make very clear, it's his voice, not his accent, that I'm mocking.
Yes.
The stones are over here. It's really.
That's
I
right.
I remember thinking.
That's uncanny.
It's Kermit.
Amazing. Yeah. Oh, that's brilliant. So anyway, the dinner scene.
Yeah.
As we said, it's cut really, really nicely between some rather dry exposition and Willy and Shorty being disgusted by this really, really gross food.
How did they do the baby snakes out of the snake? Are they just...
Well, they're like eels or something, aren't they? But
So were they supposed to be eels that... I thought they were baby snakes.
Well, yeah, but they probably used eels. But they probably used eels. Cake kind of surrounding outside, They wouldn't have used a real pregnant... Well, no, nothing would surprise me in this film. But I doubt if they'd use a real pregnant snake and then did a C-section on it.
No. Not an American crew.
No.
They're real funny about that.
But again, there have been a lot of comments and criticism that this is meant to be, Indians and foreign food. Yeah. I just think that Spielberg and Lucas are being really, really naive and they just want to present some real childish grossness.
I think so too.
Yeah.
This is an exposition scene and you can see them sort of probably sitting there trying to outgross the other.
Yeah.
Oh, let's have monkey brains or let's have eating big beetles And it's just ignorance, really. It's a naive kind of ignorance about that, the fact that they're actually being kind of racist by saying, oh, look at Asians eat this really fucking weird shit.
Because when I was 13, I never came away thinking, oh, is that what Indian food's like?
Yeah.
I just thought, brilliant, look at all that disgusting food.
Yeah.
It's more about aristocracy than anything else.
Yeah.
It's like the aristocrats joke. Yeah. The people in high power are just disgusting.
Yeah.
And I think that's what they're trying to do.
Exactly. And I mean, they probably would have gotten away with it, or it probably would have aged better if they'd gone to some made-up European country.
Or if the Nazis were eating it.
Yeah, that'd if the Nazis were eating it.
Yeah.
But it's fun. It's heaps of fun.
Oh, it's very, very funny, and it's intentionally gross, and it is gross.
I don't think the monkey heads look particularly real.
Thank God.
They could have done better with the monkey heads.
Again, could have used real monkey heads.
Yeah, well, yeah.
But then after dinner, nice bit of sort of back and forth between Indy and Willie. Yeah.
It's quite nice that he brings her fruit.
Yeah.
I think.
I have to say, she is looking lovely.
She is looking lovely.
Yeah. She looks lovely in the Indian gear, and she looks very, very lovely in those pyjamas with her hair down. I have to say.
Another way that she's the opposite of Marion Ravenwood.
She's lovely. We're going to have to leave that. Right? I think Marion's lovely.
I'm with you, Rob.
She's got personality. Sorry.
She's got lovely eyes and a lovely smile. Leave her alone.
Yeah.
But this scene's all about him being horny, isn't it?
Totally.
I didn't mention it before because there was no streaming or anything. I bought the annual, like a book version of this film, and just read it religiously all the time. I was always reading it. And this scene was a weird CD in comic book form. But it was all there, exactly scripted like it is in the film.
There's some quite grubby innuendo, isn't there?
It's not innuendo, it's single entendre. Yeah. Mating customs, I don't wear anything to bed.
What position I sleep in. Yeah. They try and almost do like a carbon copy of this scene in Last Crusade, don't they?
They do, with
Ilsa.
Yeah. They're obviously going for like a little bit of sort of a Howard Hawks kind of feel to this.
Yeah.
It's very nice where they're both waiting in their rooms, waiting for the other one to turn up. It's all good fun.
Yeah.
But then this thuggy just appears out of a painting, which I thought was really nice.
Yeah.
He just appears and attacks Indy.
It's like Viggo the Carpathian from...
Yes, that's right.
And Frank, some Harrison Ford's back.
Puts
him out of commission for a month.
He ruptured a disc and he had to have, and I did write down the surgery that he had because it was experimental.
Oh.
Papaya enzyme treatment is what he had.
Papaya?
Yeah. They don't do it anymore. Apparently there's some element in the enzyme of papaya, which if you inject it into your spinal column, it really helps. And it did. It worked on him. So it avoids surgery. You have these enzymes injected.
Any other tropical fruit that you could choose?
I don't know. Just a bit of umbongo up the arse. Yeah. I don't know.
Some guava.
Just rub some little tonic.
Because that is totally tropical. Absolutely.
Yeah. Totally.
So there's a nice fight, and the thuggy ends up hanging from a fan, which is kind of gruesome.
Yeah.
Not pleasant at all. Makes Shorty turn away.
Mm. I always thought he got... I just obviously didn't watch it properly, but there's a bit where he's getting dragged up to the ceiling fan and Short Round looks up in horror. But did you do then see that he's hanging from it? But I always thought he'd got chopped up, he got mangled in it. But he obviously doesn't. I used to think, could you really get your head chopped off in a fan? Staying away from ceiling fans.
You're thinking
that.
Of Pat Roach later.
Pat Roach and a rotating blade. Yeah, absolutely.
Walking off the set of It Ain't Half Hot, Mum.
You said if you'd said Pat.
No, just with the black face.
Oh, yeah.
He's the one black face, isn't he?
Brown bomber.
Yeah.
He can have that. So Indy goes into Willie's room.
Yeah.
And notices that there's a breeze on the flowers. Yeah. And so because of that, he deduces that there's a secret passage.
Mm.
And amusingly, he grabs the passage by the boobs. Yeah. And Willie sort of goes, I'm right over here, which is nice. and they're off. We're on to the next stage of the adventure.
Yeah.
With trails of dead bodies and bugs and cobwebs, the usual fun stuff.
Yeah.
And then another really good scene, which is the spike room.
The spike room,
which is very, very nice.
Yeah.
Very creatively edited in terms of the peril that they're in from one moment to the next.
It's also, again, very funny, very slapstick in the ways that they get trapped in there and trapped in there again and trapped in there again is good fun.
The scene where Harrison Ford sort of pokes his face in the hole and he says... We're about to die. Like the gurning.
He's a sulking face.
The face he does. It's actually really good.
I like it. It's like he's going to cry.
And then just the way that the spike sort of pushes his hat down.
Yeah.
That's a really nice touch. Yeah.
There's a bit where he sticks his fist out, and even though you don't see his face, I can see his facial reaction just to how he moves his fist.
Yeah.
It's really. I love that. That's probably my favourite part of the film. This and the bridge scene. one of my favourite set pieces anyway. I just love this spike room. It's
because,
great.
Yeah, because spike room again reminds me of the spikes in Flash Gordon where you see spikes come up and you think, oh God, we're in trouble here.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
This really, really does that. Yeah. There's a really great bit in this where you first see the spikes and it pushes a skeleton up.
Yeah.
And it almost looks like sort of Jason and the Argonauts kind of thing, where it looks like a skeleton's about to stand up.
It feels like a really good classic piece of iconography, doesn't it? The spiky room.
Absolutely.
And spike, yeah.
Yeah, it's brilliant. But they're out. Basically, they are then at the Temple
of Doom.
Of Doom, yeah. Doom Temple, yeah. With this chanting, this fire, this sacrifice. Now, I don't know why, but I've got an issue with the Temple. Okay. And this is going to sound stupid.
All right.
It really looks like a film set.
Yeah, it does.
It does,
doesn't
it?
What you mean.
Yeah,
I can't explain why. I don't know if it's the way it's lit or the grading that they're using. If you compare it to something like the Well of Souls, which you know it's a film set, but it looks real.
Yeah.
This just looks like a big film set, and I can't explain why.
Well, the stone doesn't even look like real stone, does it? It looks like it's a backdrop, a polystyrene, about the lighting.
The lighting's really ugly. Like, it's not visually pleasing, this entire sequence.
You can kind of tell that there's the big pit and all they've done is shine a load of red light bulbs up. It really looks like red light bulbs.
For Steven Spielberg, and I know it's, you know, reasonably early-ish in his career, but he's already done E.T., he's already done Close Encounters. You know, he's a master of the craft already.
Mm.
It feels like a journeyman director could have lit it this way and shot it this way. A lot of the sequences in the temple, to me.
Because he had the same cinematographer, which was Douglas Slocum, so that's not it. I think there was a different production designer.
Maybe,
I think the production designer was the assistant production designer on Raiders, so that's the only difference. But there'd have been enough eyes on it to go, not sure about this.
They could have actually made it lighter without losing the sort of sinister nature of it and probably making it look better.
But having said that, it still looks pretty horrible because the temple sort of centrepiece itself is just made of skulls and arms. There's a lot of floppy arms on top and stuff like that, so it does look pretty grim.
Did they explain why there's a big mass of lava magma pits?
No.
They'd be putting your palace house values down a bit.
Yeah. Good for underfloor heating, though.
Great for underfloor heating.
Yeah. Good for barbecues.
It just sort of feels like this would look cool and be a bit mean and nasty, but doesn't really make a lot of sense.
No, no. Yeah. It'd be difficult to insure.
Yeah. And then at the same time, there's like a mine there. You can mine diamonds and...
That could be a reason they built the palace there, because it's a diamond mine. I don't know.
But you normally have like seams of lava.
Well, they've got enough water to put the lava out. We realised that later. They've got so much. So we're going to be all right.
I'm overthinking it.
Yeah. There's no time to overthink it.
They're mining for the extra two stones, aren't they? They're trying to get the five stones.
But also, doesn't he sort of allude to any other sort of gems and things he can find to kind of fund their nefarious schemes?
Absolutely. Yeah.
They've got a better cabinet to keep the stones in than back at the village, haven't they? They've got this big skull. So part of me thinks this should stay there because that looks cool.
If I had some big potato stones, I'd keep them in something like that.
I always thought they were bread rolls.
If they really gave a shit about those stones, wouldn't they lock them up in a cupboard?
Yeah, or hide them in that funny trap door thing that he escapes in later. Just put them in there. Or a cupboard or a drawer.
Yeah, just
put them in a drawer.
Like a gun cabinet.
Don't leave
Shankara stones just down display,
Someone's nicked them again.
Yeah.
But there's a lot going on. There's a lot of people chanting.
Yeah.
This is our first glance of the high priest, the baddie of the film, Molaram.
Molaram, yeah.
He's a good baddie, actually.
Brilliant.
He is a good baddie. By the end of it, though, I remembered that he did more.
He doesn't do that much.
I was using the comparison of like a Bond villain, and it sort of feels like there's not as much of a clash and a villainous journey as, say, like a good Bond villain. Yeah.
I suppose the Connery-style Bond villains were old men.
Yeah.
He would turn up and go, oh, you're going to die now, and my men will see to that.
Yeah.
And then he'd kill him at the end. This is kind of like that.
Except
this is a big bugger.
Yeah. He turns up quite late in the piece, maybe.
About an hour through, I think.
Yeah,
there's... And that's when I was watching, I was like, structurally, this is quite weird. We've had this kind of meandering journey. Now we're in this point where it's just kind of like this dark, haunted house. Yeah, Molaram's just popped up out of nowhere. There's been, you know, some oblique references to the Thuggies, but...
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's revealed that the Prime Minister and the Maharaja, they're either willingly or unwillingly.
Well, they've drunk the blood. Blood of Kali.
That's a sort of a twist, is that they're all involved.
Yeah.
But he's behind it all and we don't see him for a very long time.
And apparently in either the novelisation or an earlier draft of the script, he was also under the influence of the blood of Kalima.
Oh, okay.
So I think before he actually falls into, he gets eaten, devoured by the crocodiles at the end, he snaps out of it, and Indiana Jones tries to save him.
Oh, but then there isn't a baddie, yeah.
Well, yeah, and it's like, well,
Carly is the baddie.
Yeah.
Everything in this last hour is so much in it, I think, that some bits do suffer, I think, probably from not having enough time. So, like, the development of that bad guy. And then even, like, when Indy becomes bad, it's done and dusted, and it starts and ends within under 10 minutes, which I'm glad about, to be honest. I didn't want that. I didn't want that to carry on too long. But it does seem like they're packing so much in that nothing has been given much time to have an impact.
Yeah.
It feels lopsided to me because so much of this, yeah, like you say, the last hour takes place in this one location, which is the temple. It feels to me like there almost isn't a second act, or like a really long second act and no third act almost.
Because I suppose the first act doesn't really start until they arrive at the village. Yeah. Everything before that is prologue.
Yeah.
They go to the village, they go, right, here's the challenge. Then they get the point of no return where they decide to do it, which is where the second act is supposed to kick in. But then we're straight into the finale.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess the second act is that sort of 15 minutes in the palace.
Yeah.
And then it's just this prolonged, I don't know. It felt structurally weird to me when I was when I watched it.
It's also, you made a very good point there, Andy. It's very episodic in the fact that something happens, oh, we fixed it.
Yeah.
Something's happened, oh, we fixed it. Yeah. Which, if you spoke to George Lucas, he'd say, oh, yeah, that's because it's meant to be those serials where you'd get a cliffhanger and you'd get a new episode.
Yeah.
But those are serials. This is a film.
This is a feature. It's resolved instantly. Yeah. It's not, you don't have to wait a week. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very like that, isn't it? That maybe the second act is the horny scene. It's just that one bit. Because that comes out of nowhere, doesn't it? That's like they had hated each other and suddenly they want to get it on. And then after that, they hate each other again.
Yeah.
Maybe that's how it is sometimes, actually.
Sounds about right.
You're right, the whole Indy turning evil for sort of 10 minutes thing, that's just much to do about nothing, isn't it? It doesn't add anything thematically, really.
It's really not the really Jeopardy.
No.
I think the only thing, if you put your filmmaker's hat on and take a step back, is that this could potentially be the point where Indy realises that black magic is real. Before then, it's been, oh, it's ghost stories and it's legend.
Well, he has seen a man's heart ripped out of his, beating heart ripped out of his body.
That's a good point.
While he's still alive and then...
But only in the uncut version. In the version that we saw, that wasn't in it.
Oh, well, the one I saw. Watch mine if I choose. Paid for it if I choose.
When I saw it as a kid, that wasn't in it. Maybe he'd cut that.
It's because Mola Ram thinks he's such an amazing archaeologist that he's going to find the Shankara stones for him.
Yeah.
Or he's going to find other artifacts for him. It's just really yada-yada why they do it. Like,
well, that's the Bond thing, isn't it? It's why don't we just kill him? I suppose we could, yeah.
But that's quite a... unsettling again sort of horror moment for me when they give him the blood of Kalima. He's writhing about on that sort of slab with all the candles around him. Then he sits up and his face is sort of like in the light and he does that kind of like goofy he does like a really good goofy bastard face like...
he's deranged, isn't he, at that moment.
But it is really just...
it's something and nothing,
isn't it? It's probably the slowest part of the film for me.
But luckily, from here, it never stops.
Yeah, yeah.
Quite exhausting, really, but in a good way, I think. Because from here, they're going to sacrifice Willy. Stop giggling.
Just like Lorena Bobbitt did.
They're going to sacrifice the heroine of the movie, Wilhelmina Scott.
Yeah.
By lowering her into the mysterious fiery pit that lives below the palace.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
While... Shorty's... Well, he was shackled up, and then he's escaped, but then they've caught him again.
There's that horrible scene where they're whipping...
They're whipping children.
Yeah, they whip Indy, the Maharaja whips Short Round. It's like, it's really unpleasant.
Kind of unnecessary.
It's unnecessary. It's just...
This is a work of fiction. You don't really need to show it.
No, you don't.
No. But again, divorce. it's the children.
Yeah. Yeah, Steve, I just got a call from Marsha's lawyers. Strap K. Hekwan to that.
Yeah,
right. I want to see that little bastard get whipped. It's poetry, it rhymes.
Did you notice that Willy got away from the thuggy guards when, you know, on the balcony when they captured Shorty? Willy actually ran away, and you don't see her again until she's caught. That's because there was a deleted scene. where she ran back into the palace and to tell the Prime Minister and those guys about it. That's how she got caught. Otherwise, you might think, how did she get caught? They led her back. I miss that every time until this time I watched something where they explained that.
That's quite a good scene. That's a better reveal than just seeing them sitting there, I think.
Yeah. But and why doesn't he pull her hat out? That's what I always wondered as well. He goes to and then he mimes it. He doesn't really actually go for Willie's hat, does he?
Maybe he thought, touching a woman's chest might be inappropriate. Yeah. Yeah. Rather just lower her into the fire.
Yeah.
Or kill her another way, yeah.
I don't really think I'm getting pressure though.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. She might get the wrong idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I've always thought it must be. He doesn't want to touch boobs.
He's a gentleman. I'm Mola Ram, not Rollo Mams.
Hey! So while she's being lowered into the fire, Shorty gets it in the face again. Indy slaps him this time.
Yeah.
Which isn't very nice. No. And so Shorty burns him, basically. Yeah. Says, Indy, I love you.
Oh, yeah, they're really... Oh, God, that really got me.
Yeah. And later on when he hugs him and goes, my friend.
Yeah, I know. So lovely. He's so good in this. Yeah. I reckon he's great in this.
I do.
And he's the moral compass of the film. He's the one who's like straight and true as an arrow.
Yep. And as you said, he is the true hero of the film. Yeah. He's the one who saves everyone.
Yeah, he's the one, Yep. Keeps everyone on mission.
They could have recreated that Indy, I Love You scene on the Oscar stage, couldn't they? I thought they could have done a skit on that, really.
Yeah, sure. And then Harrison Ford could have slapped them in the face.
Yeah, that's right.
No, not again, the Oscars.
But Indy's back.
Yeah.
Because he says, I'm back.
Yeah. Wink.
Yeah. And so they fight their way out.
Yeah.
Indy is punching people, and Short Round, because he's, from Asia, he's really good at Kung Fu.
Yeah. He's great.
Yeah. And so he's knocking out men 10 times his size just by giving him a little hit with his dap.
Yeah.
So they rescue Willie. It's kind of nice where she's kind of being raised and lowered while the fight's going on. That's kind of fun.
Hot.
Yeah.
I noticed that they do put a little bit of like pink makeup on her face afterwards.
She's a bit rouged. She has
some horrible sunburn.
Yeah.
She'd be all blistered and everything. Yeah.
She'd get nasty. Obviously, some after sun then.
Yeah.
And so they say, right, let's get out of here. And he says, yeah, all of us. So they're going to go back and get the kids.
Yeah.
So they do. Indy has a big old fight with Pat Roach again.
Yeah.
But this time, Pat Roach is ably assisted by the Maharaja and his voodoo doll.
Yes.
His voodoo doll with a little hat on.
Yeah.
So we know it's Indy.
Yeah.
Who do you think made that?
I don't know. It's probably just some chap there with a little overlocker. Yeah. Just,
Because he's not wearing the hat at the dinner party. So you think there'd be one with a little bow tie?
Yeah. I don't know. They've obviously just got someone who sews the dolls for them.
Yeah. It's just a good job. You know who it is.
Yeah, exactly. If you're not someone who is known for wearing a hat, it gets a lot more complicated. If you don't have an identifying piece of iconic
hat,
clothing.
Jacket.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I just thought it was official merchandise he was using. I'm surprised they didn't bring it out, actually, the Indiana Jones voodoo doll.
Well, no, it's like a little Thai beanie baby of Indiana Jones.
Yeah, they picked it up at Skywalker Ranch. Yeah.
So as he's fighting Pat Roach, the kids are kind of being released. They've got some keys and they're letting the kids go. And so there's this nice dual fight going on with Indy and Pat Roach. And at the same time, Shorty is pummeling seven bills of shit out of another child.
It's really brutal and unnecessary. I was watching it going, this could only have been made in the 80s, where it was just like, violence like this just got to pass.
Yeah. Because if you watch a film now where kids are fighting and they really go for it, it's horrible. I watched Black Phone recently, and there's a bit where like two kids have a fight and one beats up the bully.
Yeah.
And every time he hits him, you go, oh, that's horrible. It's a kid hitting another
kid. Yeah, I know. Or like Mirror of Easttown when...
Yeah.
Teen daughter gets punched.
Oh, it's horrible.
Yeah.
But with this, it's
Ray! Yeah.
He's punched a child. Yeah.
Oh, look, he's making his nose bleed.
Yeah.
Twat the fucker.
But very much like in Raiders, Pat Roach meets a horrible death.
Yeah.
This time it's under this big sort of stone grinder thing.
Yeah.
And we know he's there because we see the blood over the top of it, which is pretty grim.
I might never say never again. Harrison Ford doesn't throw a glass of urine in his face. But
no.
That would have been a good touch then.
We would have made the makeup run.
Yeah.
he'd look like Alice Cooper. But Shorty, who's, we know he's very handy with the fire, he gets the Maharaja with the fire as well and brings him back. And so the Maharaja is quickly, doesn't even say what happened. He just kind of goes, well, to get out of here, you need to take the left tunnel.
Yeah.
So they escape in the minecart and take the right tunnel, of course.
Yeah.
And then we get a really, really brilliant sequence.
Yeah.
Really brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's fun.
I love this.
Mm. It's really good.
I love the mixture of live action. There's some stop motion in there.
Yeah.
Which isn't that obvious. I only knew it was stop motion because I saw a documentary on it when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I thought, oh, that's good. And it's really exciting. It's really cool.
Yeah,
I don't care that it's ridiculous and it would never happen. And what.
Who the fuck
just
built these things?
Yeah. Yeah. It's wonderful.
Why did they make them like a roller coaster?
Mm. It's great. Mm. Really, really like that bit.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about earlier with how they used to do silent movies. They just used that. But they came up with the concept of minecart, and then they wring everything they can out of it. Yeah. They've got Shorty being pulled into another car across a divide. They've got the block going in front of it. They've got the missing bit of track. They just thought of everything, and that's what Spielberg does well, I think.
Yeah.
Is that he comes up with a concept, he milks it for all it's worth.
He very famously, with Raiders and the giant boulder, he famously said, well, we want to give us another 50 feet, because he knew he was onto a winner and you could just get as much out of it. And I think he did that with this as well.
Yeah.
I think he added a couple more minutes onto it and said, right, we can just do this.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, going back to Crystal Skull, the chase with the motorbike and the baddies and they're in a car. That kind of follows this as well. There's a really brilliant bit where Indy's on the back of the motorbike and he gets dragged through the car and ends up going back on the motorbike the other side. It's really good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think that's just a little nod to this as well.
Yeah.
It's great.
Mm-hmm.
This is just brilliant. I love this bit so much.
Mm-hmm. There's so much good work in this, and that's what makes me sad that Spielberg says this is his least favourite of the films. There's so much effort. In some ways, it's more creative than some of the others, I think, than the way they milk so much out of one part of the film.
Yeah,
I think that's fair. Yeah, it's much more adventurous than the others, definitely, if you go back to that.
Yeah.
But they're at the end of the, I nearly called it a roller coaster, they're at the end of the minecart chase.
Yeah.
And Indy sort of stops it with his foot and he's asking for water to put his foot out.
Yeah.
But unknown to him, Molaram has let this sort of 10-gallon pool of water, which seems to have created a tsunami of proportions we've never known.
Mm.
Which chases them down the minecart. And they manage to get out just sort of on the edge of a cliff.
Yeah.
And then we get, I know it's 1984.
Yeah.
But I think some of the worst visual effects I've ever seen.
Yeah.
It lasts for about a second.
Yeah.
When they're standing on the rock.
Yeah.
And it just looks like someone sellotaped a photo of Harrison Ford onto the telly.
It's strange, isn't it?
And you don't need it. You could just cut. Yeah. You don't need it.
Like, my expectations of Steven Spielberg are so high that you kind of think, no, he wouldn't do that. That a lesser filmmaker would let that happen.
Yeah.
Even now, I always think of Steven Spielberg using, like, well, okay, maybe not in the last 5 years, but say that sort of Minority Report era, early 2000s, the judicious use of CGI, the way that he grades it, you only need to see what makes it look really credible and believable. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, he made Ready Player One and, I mean, I know that was set in a virtual world, but just probably post-Crystal Skull, he's just gone a bit silly with the CGI at times.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just don't think he'd let that slide.
I know. Like this one, very much like Raiders, they were very proud of the fact that they finished. They didn't go over budget.
Yeah.
And they didn't go over schedule, despite Harrison Ford having to take 4 weeks off to have Umbongo injected into his
back.
To have
a pineapple squeeze on his rectum. Yeah.
But I think this could have allowed them to go slightly over budget. They could have fixed this.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone would have minded.
No.
Another couple of thousand to fix that would have been all right.
Yeah.
I just, oh, God, that's terrible. Even for that time, for that era, it just looked poor.
The one other thing that actually fucked me off, the one other visual effect, right at the start when the plane actually crashes into the side of that hill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think they kind of think you'll be focusing on the boat sliding down.
But you're not. There's a big explosion.
Yeah.
Of course you're
going to
look at
it. And it just looks like an empty little bit of flame going floof.
Yeah, that's right.
There's no substance to it at all.
It would have been better if it had gone over the mountain. You see the explosion behind the mountain like they used to when they couldn't afford to crash a plane.
That really gutted me. Yeah. That.
There's clearly a lot of rear projection, but I don't mind that.
Yeah, no.
That's part of the fun.
That's,
you know, they're not really sliding down the hill.
There's a charm to that.
Yeah. But that just bothered me.
It's insulting.
Yeah. I was insulted by it. Yeah. But nevertheless, they're out. They're safe. Phew. That's yeah. okay. All they've got to do is cross this massive suspension yeah, bridge.
Fuck that. Fuck that. Oh, my God.
Now, this was built by, I think it was Balfour Beatty, built this suspension bridge, because where they were filming, which was in like a town called Kandy in Sri Lanka. Mm. Yeah. Kandy with a K.
Okay.
Balfour Beatty were building a dam.
The
Brits were there building a big dam. Yeah. And they said, well, can you build us a giant suspension bridge as well? So they built it for them.
Yeah. The bridge over the River Kandy.
Well, that's where the River Kwai was filmed.
Yeah. Okay.
It was the location for the bridge on the River Kwai as well.
Yeah, okay.
I'm glad you said that.
Yeah.
And I think everybody except Harrison Ford was terrified of the bridge. He would just run over it and jump up and down.
He was having
a lovely time.
So he actually...
It's him running across
it.
It's not Vic Armstrong, that's him.
Jesus.
Yeah, yeah. It's very impressive, eh?
Yeah. Obviously not scared of heights.
No, I think he's okay. Mm. Which is why they could have stood him on a cliff and not done that CG effect.
Yeah.
It's just a bridge.
It's just a bridge.
Is it impressive to run across a bridge? I could do that.
In
fact, I've done that. In Disneyland Paris, I was stung by a bee on the recreation of that bridge. They've got a bridge like that, and I was stung on the belly by a bee. So I pulled off my t-shirt and I went into a meltdown and I just ran across this bridge while my son was watching in horror from one side to the other. I don't know why.
I really hope there's a girl that your son likes on the other side of the bridge that was really trying to impress.
Yeah, it was really embarrassing.
Well, because you had your shirt off, maybe they just thought you were reenacting.
That actually sounds like a Homer Simpson fucking scene.
Yeah.
And then I trod in dog shit and fell over.
So I can't think watch this film without thinking of that. Bees do follow me. I've been stung four times. And they always go for my belly for some reason.
I remember I used to work in, I've mentioned this place before, I used to work in a leisure park in Wales. And sometimes you'd have to pick up litter at the end of the day and all that sort of stuff and change the bins. And because it was summer and the bins were full of, you know, half-eaten sweets and half-drunk cans of Coke, when you put your hand in, there'd inevitably be a lot of wasps.
Yeah.
And I remember I got stung like about 10 times on my hand by wasps. And my hand literally swelled up like a Tom and Jerry cartoon. Just a massive hand. Incredible. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was like a Mickey Mouse club.
Yeah.
It was God, it
And
hurt.
Then that cave walked past and went, oh, there's a fucking good idea for
Yeah, that's right. It was my right hand, yeah.
Oh, it's wasps, of course. I don't know why I'm saying bees. It's wasps.
It was wasps, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm all right with bees.
Yeah, bees are our friends. Yeah, wasps are nasty bastards.
Oh, God, yeah.
No wasps in this, though. No. It's probably the only insect that's not in them. But
great.
Yeah, so they're on the bridge.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, they're met on both sides by the thuggies and Molarams there. So Indy threatens to drop the stones. And he says, well, they will be found, you won't. Good line.
Yeah.
Very good line.
Yeah.
So Indy speaks to Shorty. In his native language.
Or Cantonese. Or,
Which, of course, he said earlier, only uses in special occasions.
Yeah.
And clearly this is one of them. Shorty says, well, hang on, lady. We're going for a ride.
Shorty wraps a tiny, thin strand of yarn around his wrist.
A bit of hair.
And then I don't know if that's going to do the trick. Okay. A gossamer thread.
Yeah. And Indy cuts the rope.
Yeah.
They all start panicking. Even though he's been holding the sword up for ages, saying, I'm going to do it. When he starts doing it, Molaran goes, oh my God, you've cut the rope.
Yeah.
As if, well, what else are you going to do?
Yeah.
He knows he's going to die if he gives up. So, cut the rope.
Mm.
And the rope gives way.
Yeah.
Lots of thuggy guards.
Lots of mannequins.
Now, these mannequins. I know we always talk about mannequins. Yeah. Do you notice their arms and legs are moving?
Yeah.
They built little robotic mannequins that did that.
Yeah.
So it looked like people plummeting to their doom.
You would have thought that Harrison Ford might have mentioned that to the director of The Fugitive.
The Fugitive,
20 years later.
Yeah. Look at that leg.
10 years later.
Yeah. My leg's bent the wrong way. Andrew, can we have one of those mannequins?
You can make their legs.
You can make
their
legs do that. It's brilliant. Great. And so then the bridge sort of smashes into the side.
Yeah.
And some people land and are eaten by alligators. Now, interestingly, this was filmed in three separate continents.
Wow. This
scene. So the bridge itself was in Sri Lanka.
Yeah.
The bit where they crash into the rock was done at Elstree.
Yeah.
And the alligators were from Gatorland in Florida.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, Frank Marshall went and filmed some gators for that bit, yeah.
Oh.
So there you go. Little factette for you there.
Okay.
Mm. What happens next? Oh, they have a fight.
Yeah.
A bit of a scrap on the side of the mountain. I do like that Molaram uses some of the guards to try and knock in the off. He's throwing his own people down to try and knock him off the bridge, which is good fun.
Yeah.
But they have a bit of a tussle. Indy, cover your heart!
Yeah.
Which gives Molaram the idea to grab his heart. Yeah. Otherwise, he probably wouldn't have thought of it.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, I haven't done this for a while,
Yeah. Worked so well last time.
I forgot I could do this. Yeah. My one supernatural power.
No boobs.
No boobs. Yeah. No. Yeah. Grabs Indy's boob. But Indy's too strong. He doesn't penetrate Indy's chest. He just grabs it and twats him with his own hand.
Yeah.
Which I kind of liked. And then there's always a bit I don't get.
I don't get this bit. Is this the bit that you've betrayed Shiva?
You betrayed Shiva, and he starts talking in Hindi, Sanskrit.
Hindi?
In another language.
Indiana Jones.
Indiana Jones. Yeah. There must be. There has to be. Where he goes to America and slags off Americans and stuff. It'd be great. He starts talking in another language about Shiva. Which then causes the three potatoes to burn.
To burn, yeah. When you've got to take them out of the tinfoil.
You've left them take them off the bonfire. Yeah.
I didn't quite understand it.
I didn't understand when I was a kid, and I still don't really.
So how has he betrayed Shiva? Because
Shiva's the god of niceness, and Kali is the goddess of
death. It's a little bit more nuanced than that as well, if you actually look at the cosmogony of
Yes, but for the purposes of Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Yeah, yeah.
Where we're looking at darkness and light.
Basically, those Shankara stones are sort of like Shiva's stones, right?
Yeah.
So by taking them and sort of repurposing them to spread the will of Kali,
that's
how they've sort of betrayed. Because Molaram does sort of have that speech where he says, first we will... What does he say? First,
it's like a today, we'll kill the Pagal Palace, tomorrow the world, basically. Yeah, sort
of, first we'll kill the British in India, then we will kill the Muslims, then we will destroy the Hebrew god, then we will wipe... The face of the Christian god off, you know, and then, basically going through a who's who of religions.
Yeah. Then we take the Mormons.
Yeah. And the Buddhists are out there going,
yeah! Yeah. And Scientologists rule the world.
No one hates us. Except for the parents of that kid, the Dalai Lama tongues.
Ooh! Let's not, eh?
As Indy's about to cut the bridge, he says, you'll see Kali in hell. Do Hindus even believe in hell?
I don't know.
I don't think they do.
Was that a callback to sort of Empire Strikes Back? I'll see you in hell.
Maybe.
Han Solo. But yeah,
I suppose he probably didn't have time to say, prepare to meet Kali in hell, or whatever version of hell you have in your particular branch of religion.
Yeah.
Kali is supposed to be sort of like the mother of humanity.
Mm.
So she is like sort of the goddess of like war and anger and these sort of like negative things, but also like it's much more complex.
It's more nuanced.
Much more complex than that.
But I still don't understand why the stones caught fire.
No, I don't. But it's a good job they do.
Yeah, so it's lucky.
Yeah.
Because they've drawn a hole in his nice little satchel.
It's a bit white saviour, isn't it, as well? Like,
well, yeah. It's very white saviour.
I'm a bit more Indian than you are, Molaram. I'm going to.
I'm true Indian, you're not. You're bad Indian.
Yeah, you're like a butter chicken.
Yeah.
You're not real Indian.
You're chicken tikka masala. I'm one of those ones that nobody
is. Yeah, I'm a lamb sagwala.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it is. It's you're bad Indian. Yeah. I'm good Indian.
I'm good Indian.
Yeah. But it works.
Yeah.
Burns a little
hole
in
it. It's quite anticlimactic though, isn't it?
But this is the only one where Indy fights the baddie. In the others, he doesn't. And it's kind of like, he does a little something or other. But with this one, he does actually fight the bad guy.
True, yeah. Yeah, of course, famously with Raiders, nothing he's done has any effect on anything because...
All right, Sheldon.
But I mean, it's true, isn't it? Because the Nazis would have got there and melted anyway.
Marion would be dead because
Andy
Tort and I would have killed her.
About that. There would have been no mutt.
That's true.
It would have been for the best.
Yeah, I suppose tiny sacrifices. Yeah. That monkey would still be alive.
Okay.
The bad date monkey.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah. There's a few things.
Yeah, okay.
But he doesn't fight any baddies in that one. No. He fights a baddie in Last Crusade, but he's not the big baddie. He's just that man on the tank.
There's something more satisfying about Last Crusade, though, with the baddie takes the wrong cup and he takes the right cup.
Yeah.
Realises his dad loves him.
I suppose that is a common thread through all of them.
He makes the right
choice. It's really obvious, is that those that really, really desire this don't understand it, and it destroys them.
Yeah.
That's the same in all four of those films, even Crystal Skull.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't look for satisfaction in this object. Mm. Look inwardly.
Yeah. The true satisfaction at the end of the day was right here.
Yeah. It was the thuggies we made along the way.
In the end, we can dial our own destiny.
Yeah.
Flatline's in it. But yeah, anyway, so the stones get burned. They burn a hole in his bag.
Yeah.
Two of them fall out. Molaran goes to catch the other one, and it's very hot.
Yes.
So he drops it.
Yeah.
But then when Indy catches it, it's nice and cool.
Yeah.
Flying in the air, has managed to cool it down somewhat.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice. But that then causes Molaran to fall off and land on an alligator.
The way they've edited it, it's almost like the way Obi-Wan dies in A New Hope, because he just falls. And it's just basically like robes getting eaten by alligators. Yeah. Like, there's no body in there.
We can hear him screaming, but it's just a bit of cloth. He's dead. And then, as you said, the white British soldiers turn up and save the day.
Yeah.
Because that's what they did in India. That's what they were known for
in India.
It's coming and saving the day. Yeah. But then next we see, of course, is then Indy turns up at the village, which is now all nice and looks like a Dilma TV commercial. Do try it.
I have met them, Fernando family.
Oh, have you?
They came to Napier for Art Deco.
Oh, really?
Weekend quite a few years ago, and we...
Because we worked with the man who directed those adverts.
Yeah.
Veeran Naran.
Yes.
Yeah. We worked with him.
Yeah.
This is very boring for everybody, but
the Dolmar family were nice. Yeah,
he did those adverts.
If you ever see them around and you're thinking, maybe I should go and talk to them, I'd say do try it.
Yeah,
because they're lovely.
It is a very nice cup of tea.
Yeah,
Dilmer, if you're listening, we would very happily
sponsor us.
Yeah. But they turn up at the village.
Yep.
He brings back the stone, and they say, "Oh, we knew you were coming back because we've got greenery again." And then thousands of children. They can't all have been from
that
village. This is a bit 101 Dalmatians,
isn't
it? It is
a little bit, yeah.
So we just go, let's keep them.
Yeah, we'll put them to work.
Yeah. They're good little workers,
Youth wages.
Absolutely.
And the cycle of abuse continues. Yeah.
But then Willie says, right, I've had enough.
Yeah.
She turns to one of the villagers and says, would you mind taking me to Delhi? And he just ignores her. And I thought, how fucking ungrateful can you get? She's just rescued the village and saved all the children. Yeah. And he wouldn't even give her the time of day.
Yeah.
Bastard.
Yeah.
I thought it was really rude.
He's probably just thought, no, she looks like trouble.
Yeah, she didn't like my food.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They don't get over that. Yeah. And that's kind of the end.
Mm.
But of course, she's about to walk away from Indigo, so he whips her and pulls her in close for the embrace.
Mm.
That's when the cheeky elephant, Shorty's brother, gets us those antics like those round boys do.
Yeah.
And covers them with water.
Yeah.
And Shorty kind of goes, very funny.
Yeah. And then he's like, hey, I want to be covering you with water later.
Yeah. Well, but, yeah. Yes, jokes.
From my trunk.
And the film ends.
It does.
Yep, over the wonderful Raiders March. The greatest piece of music in cinema, I think.
Yeah. The soundtrack's great, isn't it, in this?
Soundtrack's really good. Yeah.
Been listening to the soundtrack this week. All throughout it, it's good. It's one of those soundtracks you can see the film as you're listening to it. And I like how the characters have got their own themes that pop in and out.
Yeah.
I love Shorty's theme.
Was Oscar nominated, I think?
Probably, John Williams is always Oscar nominated.
Yeah.
Even Anything Goes at the beginning of this film, they could have just needle dropped, couldn't they? Could have just put the song on. But they've done it with John Williams' input.
Mm.
It's got all the orchestra over it.
Yeah, he's rearranged it, isn't he?
Yeah. It sounds great. The whole thing, and that's on the soundtrack as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I was listening to that today as well. Yeah, so that will be the song that goes on our soundtrack playlist.
Yeah.
Is the Anything Goes?
Oh, great!
I just think it's fab.
Oh, cool. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah,
that's
really good.
It really is.
Yeah. Couldn't be anything else, could it?
Yeah. Mm. Okay, let's get down to it.
Yeah.
You are listening to DJ Andy Craik from Mad Wasp Radio, to use your full name.
Choose the tunes.
Choose the tunes, Mad Wasp Radio. Do you think that Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom is still any good?
I do, of course. Straight to it, I do. Yeah, it's just loads of fun. I know there's problems. I know there's darkness, which I can kind of overlook anyway because I like horror. I know there's dodgy things going on towards other cultures, voodoo and all of that. I know it's there. I can see what people get the bead upon it about, but I don't think it's that bad. I think it's just fun. I mean, I suppose that's a poor excuse for racism. But it's fun and it's good.
Racism is okay if it's fun.
So why are you racist? Well, it's a poor excuse, but it's fun.
Just having fun.
Yeah, maybe I'll rephrase that. This one really was a risk of what you say at the beginning of your show, the risk to ruining your childhood. This was that for me, because I haven't watched it for years, and it was something I loved as a child. I've told you about the comic book and seen it in the cinema, and there was no internet. I didn't even see a trailer, I don't think. I watched a clip on Blue Peter, and it was the plane clip, and I thought, what's going to happen next when they didn't have a pilot? I got that excitement again this time about the set pieces, so I can kind of look past, maybe rightly or wrongly, I can look past the more dodgy stuff about it. Because, it's a much more entertaining film than a lot of blockbusters are out there.
Yeah, that's true.
So, yeah, still very good for me, yeah.
Nice one.
Yeah, it's a good for me. I'm not as passionately enthused about it as Andy and possibly you, Chris. Only for two reasons, really. Some of the sadism just really didn't sit well with me. I think it's just what you want out of a film like this. A film like this, I don't want to be wincing at things like Kehoe Kwan getting whipped and twatting the fuck out of another kid. And some of the nastiness just took the fun off it a little bit for me. And then visually, that whole sequence on the temple right up to the minecart ride, I got visually sick of that look. It was just too dark and dingy and... I don't know, it missed some of the vibrancy and the colour and the density that you get out of an Indiana Jones movie. I love it when they're in locations. I love it when, you know, they're outside and it's not a set. And that just felt like, you said, they were just in a set. And you could tell they built a big set and wanted to, you know...
Wanted to get the money's worth.
Get the money's worth out of it. I loved Short Round in it. I thought he was just great. He made the movie for me. I thought Kate Capshaw was really good. Annoying character.
Mm-hmm.
She played it really well. Set pieces were great. Yeah, it's good. Probably still not my, you know, it's probably like top three.
High but praise indeed.
Good, you know, and you know, if you look at it as a, you know, as Spielberg might, as a slight kind of like, I don't know, misfire, it's still a fucking impressive misfire.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I'm sort of out of the running with this one because... me watching it over the last week or so, it's probably about the second or third time I've watched it in the last 12 months. It's not on rotation in the house, but if the kids say, let's watch Indiana Jones, it's going to be this one.
Yeah.
So this is the one that I've watched the most.
Mm-hmm.
I like the fact that it is so different from the first one.
Yeah.
If you're going to make a sequel, some people like it to have the same sort of formula and make it very, very similar, but some people want something slightly different. And this does that. As you said, like the setting, the first one is so vast and this one is underground. And, it's a set which I didn't like.
Yeah.
But also even things like the time frame. You look at Raiders and Last Crusade and definitely Crystal Skull. Goes on for weeks.
Yeah.
This is like 2 days continuous. Yeah. He has a sleep on the plane and he sleeps when he camps overnight. But that's it. It just runs.
Yeah.
It just goes straight through. There's no hanging about with it, and it's done and dusted within like about 48 hours or something. So it never ever stops, either for the plot or actually watching the film as well. The supporting, or his pals, his assistants, have really, really grown on me over the years. Like I said, when I first saw it, I hated both of them.
Yeah.
But now, they are great. She is annoying, but she's meant to be.
Yeah.
Out of the three indie girls, if you want to call it that, she's the funniest by mile. It's a great performance. She's a good foil for him as well. The set pieces... most of the time work. Like we said, a few little shonky bits here and there. I was okay with the darkness, probably in a similar way to Andy. I'm all right with that. You know, things like children being whipped. Nah, not so comfortable with.
Yeah.
But most of it I thought was absolutely fine. It's just good and fun and gory.
Yeah.
Questionable cultural sensitivities, but I honestly don't think that that was done intentionally. Yeah. I just think it's just two little boys. I'll say two little boys, rest in peace. I just think it's two man children being overexcited and being very naive about what they're doing.
I didn't allow that to affect my enjoyment.
It's easy for me to say from my own race, my own culture. Obviously, it's a completely different perspective, but I don't think there's any kind of intentional ism in there at all, other than...
Gism?
Well, some of that, But yeah, I really enjoyed it. It's probably third on the list for me as well, but yeah. I still really, really enjoyed watching it and happily watch it again several times, which I'm sure I will.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's definitely a good for me.
So your list is Raiders, Crystal Skull, Doom.
Yeah.
Well, we did about half an episode on Crystal Skull.
We did, yeah. I've been defending Crystal Skull so much.
Yeah, yeah.
God. Crystal Skull's still fourth, listeners. It's okay.
Well, I'm pleased with your reactions because I expected more. Because what I've read over the years and Spielberg doesn't like the film. I thought you, Chris, obviously liked it because I knew you'd watched it a lot, but I thought maybe we didn't rub. So it was good.
Oh, yeah,
you both got something out of it, yeah.
It's so rich, isn't it, with incident and set pieces, and there's always something going on. Hmm. Yeah, I don't know. It was just. Yeah, even from the moment he sort of holds the fork to her robe and punches out the woman, and yeah, it just feels a little bit...
Felt a bit icky.
A little bit, you know, I think like Lawrence Kasdan said, it's a little bit mean-spirited in parts.
And yeah. Kind
of, I don't disagree with that.
Yeah, yeah. Still a joyride.
Excellent. Mm. What are we doing next?
Oh, God, what are we doing next? Return of the Jedi. Oh, yeah.
What are we doing next?
We are doing Return of the Jedi.
Mmm.
Oh, wow.
Which is probably my kind of Temple of Doom for Andy. If that makes any sense at all.
Yeah, I'm trying to work that out.
Yeah. The way that Andy felt about Temple of Doom is probably like how I feel about Return of the Jedi.
That's my favourite Star Wars film, Jedi.
Yeah, I will look forward to that because that's been a very long time since I've seen
it. It's the 40th anniversary, of course.
Mm. Okay, time is getting on. Let's do a little bit of housekeeping. If you want to get in touch with us, we're on Twitter at StillAnyGoodPod.
Instagram is StillAnyGoodPod.
We're also on Facebook. And if you want to email us, it's StillAnyGood@gmail.com. And please remember to rate and review us where you get your podcasts from.
But mainly on Apple.
Apple. And a very big thank you to people who have helped with the running cost lately. There's been some very nice coffees enjoyed. So a massive thank you to everyone who's done that.
And thank you, Andy.
Yes, thank you, mate.
For joining us and for the coffee.
Thank you. Thank you both for having me again. I really enjoyed it.
So,
thanks a lot.
So the last time we spoke to you, you had one radio show. Would you like to plug your new radio show and your new radio station?
Yes, forget what I said last time. That old radio show, that's gone. I'm not even on that station anymore. Let's not talk about that. But me and yourself, Chris, are on another radio show now. The radio show is called Choose the Tunes. Chris appears on it every week with an indie tune choice.
Another indie.
I just came up with that. Yeah. And it's basically like, I mean, actually, you came up with this, Chris. It's like Desert Island Discs for plebs. That's one element of it. I mean, even the name, Choose the Tunes, I've nicked it off Pick of the Pops, really. And it's so that's why I say greetings at the beginning. So it's that in the first and third parts. In the middle, one person gets to choose half an hour of songs. And I need people to come on it. So Chris and Rob, you must send in your list to me. You can do that by emailing choosethetunes@gmail.com. You can find the show on Mad Wasp Radio. Mad Wasp Radio's got an app, so if you search for that. I'm on Saturday mornings in the UK at 11 a.m, repeated on Tuesdays at 4 p.m. in the UK time. But you can also get the shows on mixcloud.com/choosethetunes. And one last thing, I've also got another show coming back. It's called Screen Sounds. It's the return of a show I did previously, the last Tuesday of the month, 8 p.m. UK time. That's going to be once a month.
Good stuff.
So thanks very much for letting me plug all that.
Oh, wonderful. No. Okay, it's probably time to wrap up. Thanks again, Andy.
Thanks, Andy.
Pleasure. Really good fun. And we'll get you back on again soon,
I'm
sure.
Thank you, Rob. Thank you, Chris.
Okay, time to go. See you, folks. Bye-bye.
Yeah, I'll see you again. Bye. Cheers. Can I quiz you, because you recently had a 100th birthday. See how much you know about your own podcast. You can have a guess each.
Okay, all right.
It's not a full-on quiz, don't worry, just one question. Because I realised the film I've chosen has quite a long title. I wondered if it was the longest title. And it actually isn't the longest title. There's one longer. And I'm wondering if you know what that is. So,
Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure?
No. So I'll just tell you the one I've chosen today is 30 letters long.
Big Trouble in Little China.
Foot Rot Flats, A Dog's Tale.
Bill and Ted is 29, so it's just short of one.
I say that was 30. A good shout.
That was very good.
It was a good guess. What was the other one you said?
Footrot Flat's A Dog's Tale.
Oh, I've not written that one down. It's too short.
Big Trouble in Little China.
Big Trouble is only 23 with Marek.
Okay.
Yeah. Hello to Marek, by the way. If you want to come on my show, Marek, please do.
Oh, I'll have a word.
First Great Train Robbery?
That's 25. Oh, this is going well. I was thinking you might just get it immediately.
We might have to stick this on the end. This is good. Oh, it's not called Young Sherlock Holmes and the Pyramid of Fear, is it? Otherwise, that would definitely be.
No.
Bloody hell.
Was I on it? Was it?
Yeah. Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. No.
No,
Harry and the Hendersons.
That's only 19. I didn't count that one, but it's not long enough.
Yeah, come on, Chris.
Sorry, I'm doing terrible. I've edited all these.
Far out. You don't usually think of movies in this way, do you? What's got the longest, title by character?
This is great listening,
isn't
it?
I can put you out of your misery.
Yeah, put us out. Put us out of misery, Andy.
In eighth place, joint place, is Honey, I Shrunk the Kids and The Man with Two Brains, both 19.
Okay.
In seventh joint place, again, there's Big Trouble in Little China and Piranha 2 Flying Killers. With 23. That's only if you spell it out the two, the number two.
I know
two.
It. I've got it. Police Academy 2, their first assignment.
No, I thought it might be. Well, that's a controversial one, because if you count the number two as one character, it's 29. But if you spell out the word two, it would be 31. But I'm not counting that.
No.
Digby the Biggest Dog in the World is 28, so it was close.
Okay.
I've missed out Killer Clowns from Outer Space, which was 26. Halloween 3 Season of the Witch is 26, believe it or not. I thought that might have been it. Any last guesses?
The little girl who lives down the line.
Have you just looked that up? Yeah.
Yeah. Doing that.